Many Christians today unwittingly support the Zionist movement, but they're unaware of its dirty secrets. Today we're going to expose a few of them so that you and those you care about are not deceived. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. This is the Dance of Life podcast, and as always, I'm your host, Tudor Alexander. Thanks so much for being with me today. We have quite a lot to get through, so make sure you hit that subscribe button and do so on my website because that's the best way to stay in touch. You can watch ad-free everything that comes out, and if you want to support me, that's pretty much the only way that I will ever plan on making money off of the things that I do because I don't want to sell gimmicky products or gold or whatever other things people are doing these days with sponsorships and selling ads on their website and so on. I don't ever plan to do that, ever, and I hope that I don't have to. So Substack has been a great venue for me to be able to create a membership program where I can offer other benefits and really cool things that people can benefit by supporting me. So if you want to do that, go ahead. If you don't want to do that, but you want to watch ad-free, then go to the website as well. So it's danceoflife.com. Today we're talking about a very important topic, which is very much in the news, which is Zionism. Now, Zionism itself isn't probably so much on the news because a lot of the news is Zionist-owned and it's very liberal, but it is a topic that a lot of people are discussing. And unfortunately, in Christianity, there is such a thing as Christian Zionism. And Christian Zionism is very influenced by dispensationalism, which you know if you know anything about that. If you don't worry, you'll learn some of it today. But I will preface that I have discussed these topics quite a bit. On my website, you'll see a whole category at the top where you can scroll for various, you know, organizational purposes. One of the categories is Zionism and dispensationalism. You can go there and watch a ton of great videos on this, including my documentary titled Why the Jews Are Not God's Chosen People. Now, that probably will ruffle some feathers, as it usually does when you speak the truth, but you have to learn the truth because this entire idea, Christian Zionism is a it's an oxymoron, meaning it doesn't make sense. It's like saying a Christian atheist. I mean, it's practically the same statement. It doesn't make sense. It's self-refuting. There is no unity between Christianity and Zionism. But the reason Christian Zionism exists is because of Jewish-focused futurism, which is an invention of the Jesuits, and we'll touch on that a little bit today. But I've talked about these things extensively in a lot of my videos, especially my End Time series, which I will also link for your edification so that you can be edified in the truth and learn the truth about the end times. Most people are deceived on the end times. Part of that deception, whether you are a dispensationalist, or a Christian Zionist, is, or maybe just a premillennial, there's a spectrum. Christian Zionism is the extreme of that spectrum, but premillennialism is on that as well, and all that comes from was basically this idea that the Jews are the center of the prophecies of the end times, because they're the chosen people, right? Well, what if they're not? What does that mean for all of these movements that are being used to manipulate people and to manipulate social outcomes and political outcomes? What does that mean? So my goal today would be to help break that spell, and if you know people in your circle that are deceived on these issues, and look, don't feel insulted by being deceived. I was deceived on a lot of different things. I've talked about it a lot. In fact, my testimony, I talk about how very much I was into New Age, personal growth. I mean, I recently released a video on Trump. And the first thing I said in that video is, listen, I know exactly where I'm coming from because I was one of those people that bought gold and voted for Trump and wanted to see the Fed destroyed and all this kind of stuff, right? I was very deceived, so I'm not judging, but being deceived, you have to recognize that we were all deceived on many different issues, and so there's no shame in being deceived. You're deceived. It's just a fact. I was deceived, you're deceived, we're all deceived on many things. So don't be ashamed, don't be frustrated, just learn the truth and indulge the information. Today we're going to be looking at some interesting things, some of them probably that you haven't even learned about. We'll look at the propaganda being used by Israel with this ongoing war. So, quote unquote, war. It's not really a war. It's a genocide. But anyway, we'll look at some real news regarding what's happening in Gaza. at least up until the current point. But look, here's another point that I want to mention. I don't share these news updates to cover news. I really don't. That's exhausting. To be the latest, to be the first, that's not me. I share these news stories so that they are evergreen content, meaning they're there to provide you with discernment and understanding. The point with all of the things that I ever share is to extract principles and right judgment so that you can go to new situations and be self-sufficient in your judgment. Once you wake up to Zionism and all the things, for example, that I'm going to be talking today, you don't need me to cover Zionism every week, because you know once you see a Zionist piece of propaganda, you know what's behind it. So my goal is to wake people up. It's not to cover the news and be the first one there. But of course, you know, I got to do my due diligence, so you'll learn quite a bit. Nonetheless, it's not about the news. It's about understanding. So remember that. We'll also look at Zionism's origins, especially with a man named Moses Hess, if you've heard about him. And we'll look at some recent developments that are very interesting concerning the state of Israel and their supposed false messiah that is on the horizon, which they will for sure try to counterfeit. Absolutely. So let's jump into the first segment of this, which is propaganda. And I want to introduce you to a man named Edward Bernays. If you have heard of him, if you haven't heard of him, then he's somebody that you should know about. And I talk about him in my documentary on why the Jews are not God's chosen people. But Edward Bernays, who is also related to Sigmund Freud, if you know who Sigmund Freud is, also a atheist Jew. Edward Bernays was probably agnostic. Nobody really knows if he was atheist or agnostic, but he was a Jewish man. And he is called the father of propaganda, of modern propaganda. He was an American pioneer in the field of public relations. And of course, right off the bat, they give you propaganda because that's not what he was. He was used by the government to do all sorts of things. And propaganda, and referred to in his obituary as the father of public relations. More like the father of propaganda, but anyway. His best-known campaigns include a 1929 effort to promote female smoking by branding cigarettes as feminist torches of freedom. Isn't that interesting? And his work for the United Fruit Company in the 1950s connected with the CIA-orchestrated overthrow of the democratically elected Guatemalan government. He was very used by the government. In fact, all of the modern tactics by the government, by corporations, of persuasion and propaganda are largely based on Bernays' work. So you need to understand that. He worked for dozens of major American corporations, including Procter & Gamble, General Electric, and for government agencies, politicians, and nonprofit organizations. He was a very influential man. And of course, if you go to family and education, Edward Bernays was born in Vienna to a Jewish family. So that is a very important aspect of today, because you need to understand that the media is also very Zionist in its who owns the media, basically. This is from the Jerusalem Post, and we're going to be looking at now some back-to-back stories that are very, it just reveals to you the propaganda so obviously. I hope this is obvious, because it's very obvious to me. Okay, was having some trouble loading with that site anyway, but now if you look at Al Jazeera, which happened on the same day, the same exact day as the fox that was found supposedly in the, you know, whatever, the barrel. There was an outrage after Israeli forces kill Israeli captives in Gaza. Thousands of people have protested in Tel Aviv after Israeli forces killed three Israeli captives in Gaza who were shirtless, waving a white flag and calling for help in Hebrew. Demonstrators are demanding the government reach a deal for the safe return of the remaining captives. So these people who were innocent and who were trying to surrender were killed. Obviously, it was, you know, just a blatant war crime. And what does the IDF or political Zionist machine do? On the same exact day, look at these noble IDF soldiers saving a little baby fox out of a barrel. So keep that in mind. These are just like tip of the iceberg, man. This is from Time. And now we're going the other way. So at first you see the positive, right? And you're going to see now the negative being both used as weapons of war. Initially, it was the positive. Look at this little baby fox. It's so cute. Don't look over there where we killed three innocent people who tried to surrender. Now you're going to see something, oh my gosh, look at this horrible thing. Don't look over there where we did something even more horrible. But anyway, this is from Time, 24 Israeli soldiers killed in Gaza on Monday, the deadliest attack for IDF since the war began. Of course, anytime you understand, you read these types of titles where they have superlative descriptors like the deadliest attack, the, you know, like when they had Pearl Harbor. Now, if you know the truth behind Pearl Harbor, you know what I'm talking about and what I'm pointing to with this comment. But anytime there's superlative language like this, you gotta have a Fennec Fox moment and pay attention, because it's being done on purpose to get you to believe something. Israel said 24 of its soldiers were killed in Gaza on Monday, the worst single day death toll for the military since the war with Hamas began in October. Around 4 p.m. local time in central Gaza, militants fired on an Israeli tank. At the same time, there were massive explosions at two nearby buildings. A spokesman for the Israeli Defense Forces said on Tuesday. Now, who knows how this was orchestrated? I don't doubt that maybe these people actually died. Who really knows? I mean, they could have been, you know, sacrificed ultimately. That's not beyond the scope of war and of politics and of shaping political opinions. I mean, if you know anything about the last, heck, even 100 years of conflicts and how everything is staged, not that it's not real, but it is staged, meaning created. These things are designed for a purpose, because why? When did this happen? This happened around January 23rd of this year. Well, if you remember from the news around that time, like about a week before, and up until this point with the soldiers being killed, the largest ever attack or casualty, whatever, up until that point, there was a lot of pressure on Israel with war crimes and the International Criminal Court. This is January 12th. Israel rejects genocide charges, tells world court it must defend itself. So people were really pushing on Israel. It was getting hot. It was getting tight. It was getting crazy that they might, you know, get some sort of decision be made on them. And then suddenly what happens? Suddenly the deadliest attack in the history of the war. Why? So now, look, we're just defending ourselves. It's justified. Do you see the point? Do you see the dialectic? Israel rejects genocide charges, tells the world it must defend itself. Look, it must defend itself. A week later, approximately, like almost 2 weeks later, but still, all during this time, they were getting pressured by a lot of different people and of being accused of genocide, which you'll see from true news stories that this is the case. It's a genocide. It doesn't make you, you know, a hateful person or a bigot or a racist or anything else to tell the truth. But nonetheless, they use the negative and the positive to bring about their propaganda and their justification. Now, this next one I just absolutely love because it's so ridiculous. And I hope that you will see how ridiculous it is. Because anybody who knows the truth on these things, on Zionism, on the Talmud, on just all the things we're going to be looking at today, you will just laugh at this headline. You'll laugh. You really would. Now, this one says, this is from the Jerusalem Post, which is, of course, very much pro-Israel, State of Israel, and Zionist. Is Israel racist? I visited to get the facts straight. Opinion post. Now, this guy says I'm black, Christian, and American, and I unapologetically stand with Israel's right to defend itself. Okay, so man, we got somebody who's a token, you know, poster boy of the liberal, you know, racial identity agenda, who now he's going to give you his authority and his opinion as a Christian, American, black man. I mean, literally touching all the points that whether Israel is racist or not. Let's see. From a Christian, black, American guy. Critics told me that I ought to visit Israel and see with my own eyes how racist the country really was. So I went twice, once in the middle of a war. When the October 7th attacks happened, my immediate reaction was deep sympathy for Israel. I assumed everyone, including the media, would feel the same way I did. To my surprise, within a day, the narrative throughout the mainstream media flipped. Israel became the bad guy. Many people chose to take the side of the murderers and rapists. Since the terror attack, black Americans have been pressured to stand with Hamas under the pretense that Israel is an apartheid state. I'm black, Christian, and American, and I unapologetically stand with Israel's right to defend itself. Yes, to defend itself against a population that is largely children and women and teenagers. I know the truth about Israel, and the truth is that it simply wants to exist in peace. That's not true. That's not Hamas's goal. They stated their goal plainly, to fight the Jews and kill them. This is not new. They've been saying it since 1988. It's in their charter, and nothing has changed in 35 years. First off the top, that you need to understand is that Hamas was created by Israel. I've talked about this in my other videos. Look at, it's actually on Google that you can find this. You don't even have to dig very deep. Hamas was created by Israel. Now again, if you understand how history works, how these dialectical propaganda schemes work, what happens? You see a problem. Well, that problem gives way to a reaction, which then gives way to a solution. Hamas was necessary to justify increasing land grabs by Israel as a way to justify their Zionist ambitions of a greater Israel, of taking more land. Now they're doing this whole Ben-Gurion canal, which, by the way, Ben-Gurion was an atheist and a Zionist Jew, and he's the first prime minister of Israel. He was totally atheist, has nothing to do with God. But they're naming a canal after him, and they, of course, they want to compete with the Red Sea Canal. They want all that money and traffic to go through Israel. They're going to go right through Gaza with the canal, and they needed a pretext to go in there and kill all these people and to take them out. Do you not understand that? Everything has a reason. There's no such thing as, oh my gosh, this just happened. It just happened that all these Hamas people floated into Israel across the most secure border in probably the world, the most monitored border at least, with all the money that they've been given and the resources that they've been given. These people just floated in. Yeah, they floated in and murdered all these people. So now I guess we have to go to war because we're defending ourselves. Do you understand what's going on? I mean, it's just so obvious. But this guy is obviously a puppet. And I'm going to prove to you that the Talmud and the associated writings of the Jews are actually very racist. So go with me on this journey through these various texts. This is Sanhedrin 108b in the Talmud. The sages taught three violated that directive and engaged in intercourse while in the ark, and all of them were punished for doing so. This is not in the Bible. This is Talmudic commentary. They are the dog and the raven and Ham, son of Noah. The dog was punished that it is bound. The raven was punished in that it spits. And Ham was afflicted in that his skin turned black. Whoops. So according to the Talmud, Ham was cursed with black skin. Now, of course, apologists will have all sorts of things to say about that. But if you take that just on face value, then you realize that the Talmud actually has some very negative things to say about black people and about the African, race. I mean, I don't really believe in races. I believe in kinds, and there's only one humankind. But God created all the different races because they're all beautiful. Nonetheless, the Talmud tells you that Ham was cursed because he did what he did, and he got black skin in return. This is from Guide for the Perplexed, also another text in the Jewish kind of Judaism, Rabbinic Judaism, mysticism, they have so many texts. I mean, they really do, but this is one of them. I will now explain the simile which I have made. This is part 3, 51 of chapter 51, for Guide for the Perplexed. The people who are abroad are all those that have no religion, neither one based on speculation nor one received by tradition. Such are the extreme Turks that wander about in the north, the Kushites who live in the south, and those in our country who are like these. I consider these as irrational beings, and not as human beings. They are below mankind, but above monkeys, since they have the form and shape of a man and a mental faculty above that of the monkey. Now, Kushites, if you don't know, Kushites are basically referring to black people, people who have dark skin, because Kush was very dark. So below animals don't count as much as animals, but they're above monkeys. So there you go. And they're equal to Turks as well. So Turks and Kushites, i.e. black people, Africans, in this particular text, are considered lower than animals. You should know that. This is from Sanhedrin 59a, verse 2, also in the Talmud. And let's see. Oh, here it is. And Rabbi Yochanan says, a Gentile who engages in the Torah study is liable to receive the death penalty. As it is stated, Moses commanded us the law, Torah, an inheritance of the congregation of Jacob, indicating that it is an inheritance for us and not for them. Us versus them. So if you engage in the study of the Torah, you're just an animal pig that should be executed. So there you go. That's a good one to keep in mind. This is in Mishneh Torah, Murder and the Preservation of Life, chapter 4, verse 11. Let's see what it says. Here it is. With regard to a Gentile idolater, which, by the way, watch my episode on Trump. He's the champion of the Noahide laws. The Noahide laws were not, they're not biblical, they're just oral rabbinic tradition. And according to the oral tradition of the Noahide laws, you and I as Christians, pay attention, Christian Zionists, Fennec Fox, if you're still here watching the video, probably left a while ago, but anyway, if you realize that Noahide laws punish idolatry with death and that you as a Christian are considered an idolater, you would not be supporting Trump and these people as much as you do. But anyway, with regard to a Gentile idolater with whom we are not at war, a Jewish shepherd of small livestock and the like, by contrast, we should not try to cause their deaths. Well, good. It is, however, forbidden to save their lives if their lives are threatened. For example, if such a person fell into the sea, one should not rescue him. Leviticus 19 states, do not stand idly by while your brother's blood is at stake. This does not apply with regard to such individuals because they are not your brothers. Does this sound like something the Holy Spirit would guide them to say? Of course, it's absolutely antichrist. And again, you see the division between us versus them. Us Jews get certain privileges. Don't try to kill the Gentiles in this case, but, you know, if they're in a situation where they're going to die, don't rescue them either. You know, God forbid, they're not your brothers, they're animals. And here Christians are just cheering on the state of Israel. Okay, lost my place. Some of these things don't load the highlights sometimes, so I don't remember where the heck I had to go. But this is Avodah Zarah 26b in the Talmud and section 8. It says, the Gemara discusses the subject of assisting or receiving aid from a Gentile in the context of circumcision. The sages taught a Jew may circumcise a Gentile for the sake of making him a convert. This is to the exclusion of a circumcision of a Gentile for the sake of removing a worm, which is not permitted as it is forbidden to heal a Gentile. It's forbidden to heal a Gentile. Now imagine all of the people who are in health that are Jewish, that are holding to these teachings, that are maybe peddling the clot shots and behind these things, who have certain views about Gentiles and certain views about themselves. Isn't that interesting? It's forbidden to heal a Gentile. So remember these things because they're very valuable. You should study the people that you're cheering on and what they believe. This is Bava Kama 113a. Rav Ashi said, the Mishnah issues its ruling with regard to a Gentile customs collector, which one may deceive, as it is taught in Baraita in the case of a Jew and a Gentile who approach the court for judgment in a legal dispute. If you can vindicate the Jew under Jewish law, vindicate him and say to the Gentile, this is our law. And if it is not possible to vindicate the Jew under either system of law, one approaches the case circuitously, seeking a justification to vindicate the Jew. This is the statement of Rabbi Ishmael. Rabbi Akiva disagrees and says one does not approach the case circuitously in order to vindicate the Jew due to the sanctification of God's name, as God's name will be declared desecrated if the Jewish judge employs dishonest means. So obviously there's disagreement because some rabbis are actually trying to uphold justice while others are saying, no, vindicate the Jew. Make sure that he gets basically justice regardless, even if he's not in the right. So if you're a Jewish judge, you know, do what's right, quote unquote. So who do you follow? Well, if you don't have a standard, if you don't have an objective standard, the Jews do not have an objective standard. They have commentaries from rabbis, and there's so many authoritative texts and teachings of men that ultimately it's all tradition. You just go by so-and-so's tradition or rabbi so-and-so's tradition, rather than saying, what does it actually say in the Word of God? God says countless times, do not pervert justice. Do not show preference to the poor or to the wealthy. Do what is right. But of course, the Talmud is not an inspired book. It is an antichrist book. Teachings of men and traditions of men who separate themselves from others. If you're a Jew, that's great. If you're not a Jew, then well, tough luck. You can't be healed. You can't be pulled out of a well. If you're struggling and you're dying, you can't be vindicated in the court of law, even if you're right, if you're against a Jewish opponent, and so on and so forth. So now back to that propaganda article about the Christian black American. I mean, it can't get any more obvious, guys. Really? You got to see these things and just be like, come on, dude. It's so obvious what you're doing. Christian black American who goes to Israel and says, no, 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 they're not racist. They're the most loving people on the earth. What are you talking about? Propaganda. Learn your Talmud, learn these texts and see what they actually have to say. Because it's open and available. You can search for this on Google. Save it if you want to so they don't take it down. I don't think they'll take it down, but ultimately it's there. It's right in your face. And of course, there will be apologists that will always say, no, 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 you're misunderstanding the text. Well, I think they're pretty plain. I don't need to have a degree in Talmudic studies to really understand what it writes here because I also see it in practice. Zionism is the most racist movement. It really is. It's just as racist as the KKK, just as racist as every other horrible racist movement there's been. Why? Because it views anybody who's not a Zionist as an animal, lesser than themselves. It wants Jewish supremacy around the world. It believes that a Messiah is going to come and liberate the Jewish people and basically make everybody else be their slaves. I mean, these are just their tip of the iceberg beliefs, man. And I'm trying to be very tame, but it's, you know, there's a lot to talk about. So this is the problem. This is the problem. It's just propaganda. And of course, when you come to sites like this, like Israel 365, when it's talking about Christian Zionists, it just, if you know these things, it just makes you just facepalm 100%. Christian Zionists show up in Israel to support Israel. Never before have rabbis and pastors gone to Congress to lobby together. There you go. Rabbis and pastors just hand in hand to support an antichrist state that hates them. The Zionists hate you as a pastor. They hate you as a Christian. I mean, it's the pinnacle of ignorance, said Rabbi Shaim Steinmetz of Congregation Kehillah Jeshurun. Some 70 pastors from 18 countries visited Israel this week to see traces of the devastation of Hamas's October 7th terrorist attacks at kibbutz near Oz and in parking lot with 1,300 burned out cars. Why didn't you go to Gaza to see the you'll see, we're going to cover some real news, but why didn't you go there as well as Christians? There's Christians in Gaza, actually. Do you support those Christians who had their livelihood taken away from them and their homes destroyed and burned and their children destroyed? You don't. That's why Christian Zionism is a hypocritical movement. It's hypocrisy. It's horrible. It's just horrible. The yard with the piles of burned out, rusted cars felt almost sacred, since so many of them once contained Israelis whose lives were so brutally cut short. My God, like, the propaganda just never ends with these people. And David Parsons, vice president and senior spokesman of the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem, which sponsored the trip. Gerald McDermott, a scholar and Anglican priest, stated that the group saw that the face of radical evil, and what results, quote, when human beings become dehumanized and treat others as less than human. Yeah, it is horrible. War is absolutely horrible. I thank God every day that I'm in the States and I'm not there and getting bombed in Ukraine or in Israel or Gaza or whatever. It's horrible. But you know what? It's not one-sided either. There's horrible stuff on both sides. And often the case is, like when these types of things happen, one side controls the narrative and you only learn about one side. And it's usually that side that's doing the worst of the two. But anyway, this is also from Israel 365. Evangelical Charity donates 14 ambulances to replace those destroyed on October 7th. Of course, they have this little counter down here. Hundreds are held a hostage by Hamas. Yeah, you know what? Thousands have been killed by IDF forces. Thousands of children. We'll see the actual statistics that you need to know, because this is just hypocrisy. Less than 4 months after 14 of the Megan David Adams ambulances were destroyed in October 7th terrorist attacks on southern Israel, replacement vehicles donated by Samaritan's Purse, the American Evangelical Humanitarian Aid Organization, were dedicated in a moving ceremony in the National Library's courtyard in the government complex in Jerusalem. Gosh, what a moving ceremony that you can only dedicate ambulances to the people that have lesser casualties out of all of this. So sad. It just makes me sick to my stomach. It really does. And I hope it does to you too, because people need to wake up to this hypocrisy. And they need to wake up to the truth about the end times is the problem. The reason all these people are doing what they're doing is because they have been deceived by the beast, by the true beast, as to who the chosen people are. And they are enslaved, but not openly. You see, this is how it works. It's better to have slaves that want to be your slaves because they love you and they think, you know, you're it, rather than oppressing people into slavery. It's very smart. Delegation of Passages, donors, alumni, and staff today wrapped up an intense week-long solidarity mission, including traveling to the Gaza Envelope today to express their friendship and provide a donation of $500,000 to communities in the Gaza Envelope. Now, this seems like they're giving it to Palestinians. It really does. But it's not. They're just mentioning Gaza Envelope, so it seems, you know, noble, but you'll see in a second. The delegation visited Netiv Hasara and Kfar Aza, two of the hardest hit communities during the October 7th massacre. So now we're talking about actually Israel, but it's close to the border, where they have brought their delegation several times a year for many years and gave each community a donation of $250,000 and a plaque. Can you believe that? That expressed love and solidarity and assistance to rebuild their communities. Now I'm going to show you something extremely depressing. These communities, if you look them on the map, of course, they're right on the border. This is Kfar Aza. You can see where it is here. Here's the Gaza border. So literally, I mean, I don't know what this distance is. What is it about? You know, I don't know. Who knows? Half a kilometer, maybe something like that. It is right at the border. These people are traveling and doing all of these charades and shenanigans and, oh, we're giving you plaques and hundreds of thousands of dollars right across the border where there are children and families and people being destroyed and their livelihoods being destroyed forever and being kicked out of their homes where they have nothing left, right across the street and doing these games. It is so sickening, absolutely sickening. Same thing with the other one, Netiv Hasara, probably pronouncing that wrong, but you can see it's here, like right on the border at the top. And here's Gaza, where all these people were just destroyed, man. This is a, you know, I don't know, a wasteland now at this point. It's a wasteland. And right across the street, oh, celebrations, plaques, hundreds of thousands of dollars, solidarity. You're not a Christian. I'm sorry. You can't possibly be a Christian if you're doing such things. You have to wake up because you've been so deceived. So deceived. Now let's take a look at some real news. And I think the next one is a video that we can watch from an authentic Jewish person criticizing the Zionist agenda. Let's see. Gideon Levy, a prominent Israeli journalist. Let's see what he has to say.
I'm an Israeli. I was born in Israel. I even perceive myself as an Israeli patriot. I care about Israel. I belong to Israel. I'm attached to Israel. Don't speak about symmetria, because there is no symmetria. I would even suggest that there is no conflict. Was there a French-Algerian conflict? There was a brutal French occupation in Algeria, which came to its end. And there is no Israeli-Palestinian conflict. There is a brutal Israeli occupation, which must come to its end one way or the other. In our backyard, there is a regime which is today by far one of the most cruel, brutal tyrannies on earth. And I know what I say, because I cover it for 40 years. And this regime cannot be defined but as an apartheid. Two peoples live on one piece of land. One people has all the rights in the world, and I'm talking now only about the occupied territories. One people has all the rights in the world. The other people has no rights whatsoever. It looks like apartheid. It talks like apartheid. It is apartheid. And nobody can contradict me. Go to the Jordan Valley, see the prosperity in the settlements, and then go and see the Palestinians who live there without electricity, without water, without any rights. And then tell me if it's apartheid or you might invent it another title. I'm an Israeli.
So sad. So sad and so true. And this is the reality you have to get present to. If you believe in Jewish-focused futurism, if you believe in dispensationalism, especially if you know people who are Christian Zionists. Now, the sad part is, what's even sadder to me, is that people who are Christian Zionists are so far gone because Christian Zionism is not a rational position. As you can see, anybody with a common sense, understanding of the world, you don't have to be a political buff, a history buff, a political commentator. You don't have to really know too much. You can see there is propaganda. You can see there is an unequal coverage of the truth. You can see that there's hypocrisy when these people are meeting literally right across the street to award these other people who were less affected hundreds of thousands of dollars. Meanwhile, the other ones are starving and dying and being, you know, have no rights whatsoever. It is ridiculous. But that's the problem. People who are doing these things are so emotionally driven. No, 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 they're the chosen people. What about this guy? According to Zionist, Christian Zionist teachings and dispensationalism, he's a chosen person. He's talking to you and telling you that Zionism is one of the most cruel enterprises, that it's an occupation, that, you know, they're doing all kinds of crazy things. These people have no rights in Gaza, which is true. What about his testimony? Does it matter? Of course it doesn't to these people because they're blind. They've been blinded by the beast. Let's look at some real news. 12,300 children have been killed in Gaza since, this is recently, this is a couple weeks ago. This video is being filmed March 13th. So that these are all relatively recent, within the last month or two. Israeli soldiers stole over $54 million from Gaza Bank, local reports say. So there you go, plunder, loot, destroy. I'm sure that had to do everything with Hamas and, you know, stopping terrorist funds, because we have to justify these things. Half a million, update on day 109, half a million Palestinians face catastrophic hunger. Look at these people. Look at these children begging for food, trying to get whatever they can in their little containers. It just breaks my heart. I'm frustrated that aid is still entering Gaza, says Israeli heritage minister. So frustrated that aid is still helping these people. We got to kill these animals, right? Israel's security minister tells IDF soldiers to shoot any Palestinian on site, even if they do not pose any threat. Oh, I guess it's time for more foxes to be found, right? Remember those three people that were trying to surrender and they got shot? Even though they were speaking Hebrew and they were obviously trying to surrender? No, 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 we're going to kill you. These people are animals, man. And the real animals are the ones doing the dirty work. Dozens killed in Rafah airstrikes as full-scale Israeli ground offensive looms. More than a million civilians sheltering in Gaza's last place of relative safety brace for all-out assault. Of course, they've pushed these people south and south and south, and now there's just a humanitarian crisis. There's barely any food. There's sanitary conditions are horrible with all these people, you know, next to each other in some tiny little place, and now they're going to, who knows what they're going to do, but it's just so sad, man. Israel is blocking 1,049 containers of humanitarian aid. These are all stories recently. We're going to do it, Israeli PM Netanyahu said, on invasion of Rafah. Of course they're going to do it. What do they believe? Remember, if you're not a Zionist Jew, then you are an animal. And they have been chosen by God to inherit this land and do whatever they want. Top U.S. official confirms Israeli government not allowing flour into Gaza. Of course, because, you know, terrorists might use it to create flour bombs. All Gaza household forced to skip meals each day. So they're skipping meals in order just to have something to eat. So sad. Look at all these people. Just look at them. Imagine if you were one of these people. It really breaks my heart, man. It really does. Israel attacks on Lebanon kill over 10 Lebanese civilians, including children. Of course, you're not going to hear about that on the news. And whenever they do, they always spin it in some way. This is from AP. It looks like it's quoted. So good for them. Our plight here is unimaginable. No entry of Gaza aid in days. Look at these kids. Look at them. You're not going to see these pictures on mainstream media. Why? Because mainstream media is owned by the Zionists. Palestinian children are found dead. European children are killed. Look at the, again, propaganda. Edward Bernays. BBC News, BBC News. Hind Rajab, 6, found dead in Gaza days after phone calls for help. She was found dead. Ukraine war. Baby killed in Russian strike on Kharkiv hotel. So when the bad guys, quote unquote, are doing something, it's though they're the killers, they're the murderers. But if, you know, if we're talking about the people who are the victims in this case, well, they were found dead. Isn't that just disgusting? I mean, really, look, you got to wake up to this stuff, man. Look at this. More than 10 children a day lose one or both legs in Gaza. Almost all of these amputations were done without anesthesia. Look at this poor child. Of course, this is blurred out, but he's got, I don't know if this leg is still intact. Seems like he just got a bar in his leg, but this one's been amputated. Amputated, man. This kid is probably like 8 years old. It's so sad. He's got to be in a wheelchair for the rest of his life, crawling around. So sad. 12,660 children killed in Gaza within 134 days. Almost 30,000 Palestinians killed. Out of those are 12,660 children and 8,570 women. Oh yeah, we're against Hamas, all right. No, your war is against women and children, because if you look in Gaza's population, at least I don't know what it is now, but it used to be 50% of Gaza's population was 18 or under. So that should tell you something. Number of injured, 68,677. Latest figures as of day 134. So crazy. 130 journalists killed. This is not a war. This is a genocide. You're not defending yourself against these people. Since the interim ICJ ruling, Israel, International Criminal Court of Justice, Israel has killed over 2,655 Palestinians. So since the International Court of Justice ruling, they have killed thousands of people. Look at these poor people. I mean, this is just sad. UN report, credible allegations of sexual assaults on Palestinian women. Of course, I mean, do you expect anything less? It's just sad. Satellite images show hundreds of aid trucks stuck at Rafah crossing. You can see this satellite image. Look at all these trucks. They're not letting them get in. And these are, this is food. This is aid for these people. And of course, if you can't slaughter them, then you'll make up excuses so that they can starve. We are already in the midst of a disaster, and the United Nations has been forced to suspend humanitarian aid. Israel uses hunger as a weapon, and this is against international law. Joseph Borrell, European Union Foreign Policy. Yeah, of course they're using hunger as a weapon. They're like, remember that, what's his name, Gideon Levy or whatever his name was? He said that the Zionist enterprise is one of the most cruel in history. That should tell you something, man, especially from a Jew who has studied this enterprise for 40 years. If you can't take his testimony, then you're not actually for the Jewish people, because a lot of Jews are actually against Zionism. Israel not complying with International Court of Justice order in genocide case. Of course they're not complying, because their Talmud teaches and their ideologies teach that anybody who's not a Zionist is an animal. Now, of course, the Talmud is not a Zionist book, but they, you know, the same principles you saw. There's a lot of racist stuff in the Talmud, man. It's a lot of us versus them. Last time food delivered to northern Gaza was January 23rd, UNRWA. So, I mean, at the time of this video, this was almost 2 months ago, which who knows what's going on. So sad. 627, this is the number of healthcare workers that have been killed in Gaza. So the health system has been completely destroyed. Sakar al-Shanbai starved to death by Israel and being in Beit Hanun in northern Gaza. The second documented case in less than 24 hours. This is merely the tip of the iceberg. With no electricity, internet, and phones, many similar cases will pass unnoticed. Imagine if she was Ukrainian. Yeah, good point. Look at this beautiful little girl, chubby cheeks, and she starved to death, and look at her now. I mean, it just makes you sick to your stomach, man. It really does. Day 151, Israeli military blocks the first UN food convoy for North Gaza, preventing the first attempt by the agency to deliver aid there since February 20th. There you go. Preventing more food, more aid. God forbid that they actually have any food. Look at this poor women. They're just bandaged. There, 9,000 women have been killed. Many more under the rubble. On average, 63 women are killed in Gaza per day. 63 women per day, if you were to average it out over the course of this conflict, of whom 37 are mothers who leave their families behind. 37 mothers per day killed. That if you don't wake up from that, from this Zionist spell, which ultimately was cast by the beast, because the beast has a purpose for Zionism, then I don't know what to tell you. Israel has killed more than 31,000 Palestinians and wounded at least 72,000. This is a little recent. This is more recent. This is from March 12th, I believe. So it's a little more recent. Gaza welcomes holy month of Ramadan. 31,122 Palestinians killed, 72,700 Palestinians injured, 23 children died from malnutrition, 1.7 million internationally displaced or internally displaced, and 60% of the housing in this region has been damaged or destroyed. And yet, if you remember, those stupid Christian Zionists were sitting right here, right across the border, or here somewhere, I remember, these two places maybe, half a mile away, probably something like that, cheering and giving plaques and hundreds of thousands of dollars to these people, where these people are just in total hell. Hell on earth. Hell on earth. So sad. So sad. So, look, the father of propaganda was a secular Jew. You need to understand that. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily a lot of things for Zionism, but there are a lot of connections, and I explore them in my documentary, Why the Jews Are Not God's Chosen People. You need to see a trend that is very important. The biggest companies and the military, the CIA, various organizations use Bernays to convince people to do horrible things like revolutions, smoking, and a lot of other things. Today, that information is being used by everybody on both sides to manipulate the outcomes and to manipulate your perception. And the state of Israel, who controls the media and who lobbies Washington like crazy, is engaging in massive propaganda to hide the truth. Christianity calls you to test the spirits and to be sober, because the devil is prowling around like a roaring lion looking for somebody to devour. It tells you to have discernment, to judge with right judgment, and it's very plain and clear to anybody. You do not need a degree in theology. You do not need to be studying the Bible all day to see very plainly. Use your conscience, for crying out loud, to see the hypocrisy of everything I've just shown you. Use right judgment. Christian Zionists are not using right judgment. Dispensationalists who are supporting this nonsense are not using right judgment. You need to realize these things. So it is what it is. Now let's talk about Zionism and its dubious origins. This is a man named Moses Hess. You probably haven't heard of him, but you're going to learn about him today. Moses Hess, or Moritz Hess, was a German Jewish philosopher, early communist, and Zionist thinker. His theories led to disagreements with Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. He is considered a pioneer of labor Zionism. Interesting man, Moritz. He married a poor Catholic seamstress, that's also an interesting note, Sibylline Pesch, in order to redress the injustice perpetrated by society. Although they remained happily married until his death, Sibylline may have had an affair with Friedrich Engels. Isn't that interesting? While he was smuggling her from Belgium to France to be reunited with her husband. Sibyl, however, claims the relationship was non-consensual and accused Engels of rape. The incident may have precipitated Hess's split from the communist movement. So him and Marx and Engels were very chummy, but obviously they had some disagreements, and also potentially this situation with his wife that happened where Engels abused her and caused a rift between them. But nonetheless, they were connected, which is an important point. Views and opinions. Hess became reluctant to base all history on economic causes and class struggle like Marx and Engels did, and he came to see the struggle of races or nationalities as the prime factor of history. So races are the issue. According to George Lichtheim, Hess, who differed from Marx on a number of issues, still testified in a letter to Alexander Herzen that he and Herzen were writing about what we're writing about resembles a neat sketch drawn on paper, whereas Marx's judgment upon these events, the European upheavals, is, as it were, engraved with an iron force on the rock of time. From 1861 to 1863, he lived in Germany, where he became acquainted with the rising tide of German anti-Semitism. Now, again, anti-Semitism is a buzzword. You have to understand that anti-Semitism prior to the time of these people, who were very Jewish-focused, like Hess, was not really used. It started getting used in the mid-1800s, but it wasn't even popularized, of course, after the Bolshevik Revolution. It started to become popularized in the West, and it became a tool to suppress critical thinking. Anti-Semitism, for all the hundreds and hundreds of years, almost 2,000 years that the Jews were persecuted, actually more really if you consider the Old Testament, not a single time was the word anti-Semitism ever used. Not a single time is it used in the Bible. Not a single time was it used by, you know, anybody, up until these people started to come around who were very pro-Israel, pro-Zion, pro their own race, which of course the Jews are not a race, but they believe they were. And these things started to say, well, now you're against us, so you're anti-Semite. Well, Shem is the father of many, many people, including the Arabs and the Palestinians. So anti-Semitic doesn't apply just to the Jews, which of course they make it apply to themselves, but it's not true. I talk about this in my documentary, so make sure you check that out, because when you're reading this, this is an anachronism. Okay, an anachronism means that two things are not relating in the same period of time. Like, for example, if you saw a cell phone in, you know, with the Romans, well, they wouldn't have pictures by then, but let's say, you know, a cell phone in like the beginning of the 1800s. Of course, there are some weird pictures like that on the internet, but that's an anachronism, doesn't belong. Well, when you say the rising tide of German anti-Semitism, Germans didn't consider anything anti-Semitism. The Jews were kicked out of countless countries for many centuries. Now, you can look into reasons why that's the case, but nobody accused, even the Jews themselves didn't call other people when they kicked them out of the countries anti-Semitic. This whole anti-Semitic buzzword started in the 1800s with these people like Hess, who wrote about Zionism. And of course, it got perfected with the communist Bolsheviks. And because the left is what won World War II, the leftist agenda has taken over and a lot of money has been pumped into Zionism. And of course, they control the media and everything else. And so the word anti-Semitic has been weaponized. But German anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism was not a thing. There were anti-Jewish sentiments. Yeah, there were. But you should look into why that was the case, because it wasn't like there's no reason for that. But anyway, it was then that he reverted to his Jewish name Moses after going by Moritz Hess in protest against Jewish assimilation. He published Rome and Jerusalem in 1862, which is an interesting title for a book. It truly is, if you see the trajectory of these things. Hess interprets history as a circle of race and national struggles. He contemplated the rise of Italian nationalism and the German reaction to it. And from this, he arrived at the idea of Jewish national revival and his prescient understanding that the Germans would not be tolerant of the national aspirations of others and would be particularly intolerant of the Jews. His books called for the establishment of a Jewish socialist commonwealth in Palestine. There you go. Moses Hess, the originator of this idea, in line with the emerging national movements of Europe and as the only way to respond to anti-Semitism and assert Jewish identity in the world. Anti-Semitism, this is an invented thing. If you're going to see anti-Semitism, then it has to also apply to Muslims and to Arabs and to Turks and to Palestinians and all types of people. But anti-Semitism, of course, is being weaponized and saying, look, Moses Hess saw it as a clash between races. And of course, he's going to create this dialectic between, well, it's the race, you know, race wars, and the German race is against the Jewish race, and they're anti-Semitic, and they don't want us, and all these invented dialectics. When in reality, there is history to consider as to why the Jews were expelled from Europe over 100 times, just like the Jesuits. There's not a racist thing to say this, folks. History is history. History is ugly. Oh, it's so ugly. But it's beautiful as well because it's the truth. The Jesuits were kicked out of like 100 countries too. For why? Because they fomented trouble. They fomented revolutions. They fomented a lot of things. Well, Same with the Jews. It's not a racist thing to say if you know your history. There are plenty of documented things that support these things. Now, I don't support hatred against any group. I really don't. But history is history. You have to learn your history. When you see these buzzwords like anti-Semitism, they are there to trigger you into making a choice. Either, oh no, I don't want to be an anti-Semite, so you stop critically thinking. Or you get upset and you stop critically thinking. Either way, it's there to throw you into a loop. Anti-Semitism is not what you think it is. It's a weaponized term designed to stop critical thinking. Roman Jerusalem. This is the book that he wrote. A book published in 1862 in Leipzig. It gave impetus to the labor Zionism movement. In his magnum opus, Hess argued for the Jews to return to the land of Israel and proposed a socialist country in which the Jews would become aggrandized through a process of redemption of the soil. So Hess was a socialist, and he is the originator of this idea of a Zionist state, and also really promoted these ideas of anti-Semitism and the buzzword of anti-Semitism, which again didn't really exist before these people's time. It really did not. This is from mosaicmagazine.com. It's titled "How a Founding Socialist Inspired Karl Marx and Then Went On to Herald the State of Israel." So he inspired Karl Marx. In 1862, Moses Hess, one of Europe's most prominent socialist thinkers, declared that he had become a bat teshuvah, a penitent. Even after this decision to return in some sense to Judaism, Hess never embraced Jewish observance or traditional theology. So Hess was not a, like most Zionists after him, he was not an actual faithful Jew. He was an atheist or a secular or had his own ideas about religion and theology. But he had undoubtedly undergone a spiritual transformation, and would from then on devote his energies, many years before the Russian Jewish Lovers of Zion or Theodor Herzl, to advocating a revival of Jewish national life in the land of Israel. How is it that this thoroughly Europeanized Jew, whose writings influenced Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, became the grandfather of modern Zionism, revered by such figures as David Ben-Gurion, who again was an atheist? He was an atheist. If you're God's chosen people, how can you be an atheist? What exactly did he believe and he was repenting from? And why did he characterize a shift in his thinking in such deeply theological terms? Yes, who was guiding Hess? What kind of spirit and spiritual transformation did he have that he would create such a monster of an ideology? To understand all this, it's necessary to look at the world that shaped him and his early thought. Of course, you can read these things on your own, but the point is, where do these things come from? The communist rabbi, Moses Hess. Moses Hess is an anomaly, a founding father of revolutionary socialism in Germany. He is best remembered today as the first secular Zionist. So see, he was secular. An enthusiast handicapped by an open mind, he took up many causes but found satisfaction in none. It was not by chance that already in the 1840s, his socialist comrades had dubbed him the communist rabbi. There you go. So chummy with Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. And ultimately, look, what do we take from this? Well, Zionism began with a man that helped to shape communism. They were very chummy, and he influenced the creation of communism through Karl Marx and Engels. He was called the communist rabbi. Hess had a lot of different views about communism. Of course, they didn't have, you know, they didn't agree on everything, but nevertheless, he helped to create it. Now, if you know your history, Marx was a Jew. He was from a family of rabbis. The Bolsheviks were mostly Jewish. I cover this in my documentary, Why the Jews Are Not God's Chosen People. They were mostly Jewish, and most of them were atheists, by the way. So we're not talking like, you know, faithful Orthodox Jews here. Most of them were atheistic Jews that were part of this cabal of, you know, pro-Jewish, but not really, again, not nothing really to do with Judaism, but really this cabal that they were part of, that if you were not part of it, you're just an animal that needs to be destroyed. The Bolsheviks were mostly Jewish. And the reason anti-Semitism became weaponized is because people started to realize the fact that this cliquey group of Jews, what they were doing. And of course, if you realize that and you speak against it, then you would be killed and you would be thrown in jail. It was weaponized during the Bolshevik Revolution, and it's been weaponized now. Because you can't question Israel or the state of Israel or these various policies. Otherwise, you know, like, look in Europe. Europe has legislation in many countries that if you question the Holocaust, you can go to jail or face, you know, I don't know how many thousands of euros in a fine. Are you kidding me? To question the narrative of a historical event? That's one of the most scientific things you can do. Show me the evidence. Let's discuss it. Let's have an open debate so we can discuss it, because this is important. We're basing billions and billions of dollars off of this, where there is good reason to suspect that things did not happen the exact way that people are saying they're happening, that these people are using this as an extortion, probably the greatest extortion scheme in history, to basically fluff up their political ambitions with free money. Let's see the evidence. There's nothing racist about that. There's nothing, but you see, this is how they get you. Anytime they appeal to your emotions, how can you be? Oh, look how many people were killed. You must be an anti-Semite. It's not at all based on evidence. It's all based on manipulation of the emotions. But this is what we're looking at. So these people who influence the lobbying of countries, who influence the, you know, the communist agenda that has swept the world since World War II, and of course that agenda is now being revealed to you through globalism and all the various channels that are talking about the big bad deep state. Of course, that was on purpose. Communism is supposed to lead you into the new thing, which is going to be a Christian nationalist empire. And that's by design. It goes dark to light. You needed communism. Well, they needed communism to push people from the left into the right. But nonetheless, the left was the system since World War II that has basically dominated the world through its liberal practices. And those liberal practices were very much influenced by the man named Moses Hess, who is also the father of Zionism. Very interesting. Most Zionists were also atheists or secular. I go into detail on that in my documentary as well. The father of Zionism. Now, Moses Hess is the grandfather. Theodor Herzl is considered the father. And he met with the Pope in 1900 or so, right before his death, asking the Pope to basically support their ambitions. Now, what happened after that meeting? Well, within 40 years, 50 years, you had two world wars scheduled, and millions of people died. You had basically the transfer agreement. I've talked about this in other places as well, where Hitler was basically organizing with the Rothschilds to send, I don't know how many, tens of thousands of Jews to Palestine to colonize it. And Rothschilds paid for it. Now, Rothschild is also, if you are into the whole deep state thing, then you should know about Rothschild. But Rothschild is, on the surface, Jewish, but Rothschild means red shield. Red shield appeals to the Roman red shields because they wore red shields. It's a Roman power. The Rothschilds are just puppets of the Pope, like everybody is. And so ultimately you have to realize, what is the point? Well, Israel has a purpose. The state of Israel had a purpose. It was the perfect timing for them because they needed to fulfill this false prophecy that they created. And I mean false prophecy by dispensationalism and this whole Zion and Christian Zionism, Jewish-focused futurism. This is all Jesuit invention, folks. It's designed to take your attention off the true chosen people, which is the body of Christ, which is who Christ has redeemed and given a new heart to. Those are the true chosen people. Not people of the flesh, not people who are atheists, not people who kill other people, not people who say Ham was cursed with black skin, not people who say you can't rescue somebody who's drowning in a well because they're a Gentile, or help them in a court case, or heal them, or whatever else. Those are not God's chosen people. Very plainly so. And yet Christians, a lot of Christians have been duped with this. The papacy has hidden itself behind these futuristic teachings. People expect there to be a third temple being built by the Jews, and it will happen. And a false, whatever, antichrist or whatever, to walk into the temple and proclaim himself to be God. When in reality, the true temple is the church, meaning the body of believers. And the person who's walked into that temple is the Pope, the papal institution, really, because it's been around for a while, and proclaimed himself to be God, forgiving sins, calling himself Holy Father, sitting in between the cherubim, you know, yada, yada, yada. I've talked about these things a lot. So you need to learn the truth about the end times, because the Zionist state of Israel served a very, very important point for the Pope, both economically in the sense that it can feed America and the petrodollar. America is the second beast. It's at the bidding of the Pope. And of course, America needs to be kept strong. So there's an economical purpose there to have this little linchpin in the Middle East where it can create conflict all the time and justify wars. And of course, it has a spiritual purpose too, because it fulfills this fleshly inversion of the end times prophecies, where they replace this. This is the true replacement theology. People who comment on my videos say, "Oh, replacement theology is anti-Semitic. Replacement theology is evil. It's wicked." Like, dude, are you serious? The true replacement theology is Jewish-focused futurism, dispensationalism, Christian Zionism. This is true replacement theology. You're replacing the bride of Christ with people that don't care about Christ, who crucify Christ, who hate Christ. You're replacing the church, which is this beautiful connected network to Jesus Christ of genuine believers who have no apostates, because Jesus cannot lose anybody that the Father has given him, John 6, with a group of people who have largely died in their sins in the last 2,000 years and rejected Christ. You replace the spiritual temple, which is spoken about throughout the New Testament, in Peter, by Paul, by John, by Jude, James, all of them believed in a spiritual temple. Watch episode 6 in my End Time series. You'll learn the truth. You're replacing that with a physical temple where sacrifices are being done. Do you think God would ordain that there would be a temple being built? Of course, now he probably, if it does happen, then God has ordained it to happen to fool people and to separate between the elect and the non-elect. Because again, Jesus says in Matthew 24, what is coming will fool even if the elect, if it were possible. So if they do end up building a third temple and you see a quote-unquote antichrist walking into that temple, then you need to be aware that what is being orchestrated is a great deception. It is an enormous deception to bring about the New World Order, a false Christ, a world peace of some kind, whatever the agenda is going to be, what we're going to have to see how it actually plays out. But that the state of Israel and this whole third temple thing is being used to bring about the agenda is unquestionable. It is totally true. So learn the truth. Now, with that in mind, let's move to this whole idea of the coming Messiah for the Jews. White rainbow, this is again Israel 365, white rainbow spotted in northern Israel, sign of the Messiah. And of course, they misappropriate things. We're going to look at a lot of verses today with some of these articles, because they misappropriate scripture like crazy. A white rainbow composed of mist. This is the rainbow here, so you can see this phenomenon that happened. A white rainbow composed of mist was spotted in northern Israel on Friday by Nadav Yisraeli, an ornithologist at the Society for the Protection of Nature. As the name suggests, this is a phenomenon. This phenomenon is very similar to the colorful rainbow we normally see, but is formed in fog rather than in rain. Because of the very small size of water droplets in the fog, less than 0.05 millimeters, the colors in such a rainbow are very weak. Keep that in mind because it's interesting language. And you can see mainly the color white with a little red on the outside and a little blue on the inside. In a normal rainbow, the water drops break the light into its colors, and each color is perceived at a slightly different angle. In a rainbow that appears in the fog, the water drops are small and close to each other so that the colors mix again and are perceived as white. This also is what happens normally in clouds, which is why they are perceived as white. Many people, upon seeing the rare phenomenon, were reminded of a section in the Zohar, not in the Bible, but in the Zohar, that differentiates between a dark-colored rainbow and a light, uncolored rainbow. The Zohar writes that a rainbow in dark reminds us that God made a covenant in the time of Noah, promising not to bring a flood to the world. A colored rainbow should awaken us to repentance, and that the gods of God's covenant in the days of Noah were bound by the law of the 16th century. I don't know what this is referring to, but anyway, probably something in the Zohar. But according to the Zohar, a rainbow of bright colors or entirely white marks the imminent arrival of the Messiah. Again, not the Bible. The Bible already tells you when the Messiah came, but they can't use the Bible because the Bible points to Christ. It is a reminder of the covenant of the biblical patriarchs and the God's promise to return the people of Israel to the land of Israel. This is a Zionist teaching. It's not true. When God does so, he will adorn the people of Israel with all the decorations of a bride. Who is the bride? It is the bride of Christ, which is the people who have faith in Christ, who is the Messiah. We're going to look at some of these in a second, but I want to check another one. This is prayers for rain that began on October 7th, being answered as precursor to resurrection of the dead. So there's some rain that really happened in Israel recently, and so they're thinking this is a sign. This is Messiah's coming soon. As Israel experiences several weeks of heavy rain, the Sea of Galilee's water level rose some 15 centimeters during the last 36 hours due to said rainy weather, which is expected to continue for several days. One prominent rabbi noted that Israel began praying for rain on October 7th. Isn't that funny? The holiday of Shemini Esaret, as Hamas terrorists began their massacre. And of course, if you know the story behind the massacre, the fact that they just snuck in there, come on, across the most watched border on the earth, this was a coordinated event, people. Why? Because this is what they believe. They got to give a sacrifice. And then once they give the sacrifice and Israel is in turmoil, then the Messiah can come. That's what their religion tells them, all their occult practices. According to the Water Authority, the lake's water level now stands at 210 meters below sea level, or 1.85 meters below its full capacity. This is a dramatic improvement over the past years. On April 4, 2016, the lake level was 3.29 meters lower than today. The level measured at the time was 212 meters below sea level, or 3.61 meters below the upper red line. Israel suffered from a five-year drought, and 2018 was one of the driest in the last 100 years. Well, that should tell you something, Israel, if you read your Bible. March 2018 was the lake's lowest point in water income since 1927. Rain in Israel is a reflection of the relationship between the Jews and God. Let's see. Of course, they quote to you Deuteronomy, when the people of Israel being spoken to in this verse have nothing to do with the people of Israel living in the state of Israel today, but that's another point. Watch my documentary. If then you obey my commandments that I enjoin upon you this day, loving Hashem, it's actually loving Yahweh your God, and serving him with all your heart and soul, I will grant the rain for your land in the season, the early rain and the late rain. Deuteronomy 11, verse 13. Jews begin praying for rain at the end of Sukkot during Shemini Atzeret by adding a verse to the second blessing of the Amidah called Jevorot Jeshamim, meaning the power of the rain. The verse Mashiv HaRach Hu Morid HaGashem offers praise to God for the blessing of rain. Precisely the hour when the Jews in Israel began praying for rain, Hamas terrorists poured across the border and murdering every Jew they encountered. I'm sure this was a complete coincidence, right? Rabbi Yosef Berger, a descendant of King David. This is why I highlighted this article, because there's some crazy things that they say. A descendant of King David? Get out of here, man. There's no records of people after AD 70. The temple was destroyed twice. Imagine the effect on the Israelites and the Jews with such a crazy dispersion. The temple was destroyed the first time by the Babylonians and the Edomites, mind you, who later converted to Judaism. And then the second time it was destroyed in AD 70. There are no records of genealogies of people from the Levite tribe or from David or from this or from that. That was done away with. Why? Because we're in the new covenant. And it's not about genealogies anymore. It is about whether you have a relationship to the offspring of Abraham, which is Christ and the promised Messiah. So this is nonsense. This is just bogus when you read these things. You have to understand this. And a former member of the Sanhedrin, well, that I wouldn't deny. I'm sure that's probably true. Emphasize that beginning that day, Jews were united in crying out to God. When Jews are united in prayer, it's like Mount Sinai, Rabbi Berger said. This is how Jews were meant to pray, as a united and unified nation. Since we have been praying so powerfully as a united nation since Shemini Atzeret, these prayers are being answered in every detail. Of course, the prayers for success in wiping out Amalek and Hamas are being answered and will be answered to a more powerful degree. Now, Amalek has already been wiped out. Amalek was an ancient peoples, and they were judged. But anyway, if you are a Talmudic rabbi, you appropriate things to other peoples so you can justify your views. But also the prayers for rain that began on that awful day are also being answered. And so many Israelis are strengthening in their connection to God. When Jews are unified, no evil can touch us and no enemy can defeat us. Even more when we proclaim the unity of God by saying, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one." Well, in the Bible, that word is echad. One is echad. This is another thing you have to know. Well, what does that mean? Does it mean like one as in one, numerically one, or one as in the union of God? Because it also says two shall become one flesh, echad flesh, when speaking about a man and a woman when they get married. So are they joining themselves physically? We have to be consistent, because this word doesn't mean one numerically. It means of one mind. Why? Because God is a plural being. He exists as Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Even in the Old Testament, the Jews had a theology of two powers in heaven, because you had Yahweh as the angel of Yahweh, and Yahweh the one that you didn't see. But they were different. They were speaking separately of one another, and obviously there was distinction, but yet there's unity within God. He's the same being. So this whole idea, again, the Jews do not worship the God of the Bible. They don't even call him by his name, and their religion doesn't even acknowledge what the original Jews believed, which is a plurality within God. It's a different religion. Reign in Israel is connected to the Messiah. In the section of prayer praising God for his ability to reign, to bring rain, God is also praised for his ability to resurrect the dead, as rain is seen as resurrection of the land. Rain represents resurrection in the time of the Messiah. Rabbi Berger said, God was sending rain as chesed, loving kindness, and comforting those in Israel who suffered a loss. Heavy rains are a sign that the final redemption is imminent. Midrash Bereshit Rabbah, okay, so not the Bible again, states that in the end of days, God will break the covenant he made with the nations of the world after Noah left the ark. Really? We're going to look at that. Flooding will appear to destroy parts of the world like never before since the floods in the days of Noah. Keep all this in mind, because we're going to refute it very quickly with the word of God. And at the same time, rains will appear as a comfort for the people of Israel. Again, us versus them. The real people of Israel are the ones that are placing their faith in Christ. And yes, you will be comforted. The Midrash notes that the covenant God made with Noah was, quote, for the generations of the world. The Midrash states that this will end with the Messiah when the Messiah arrives to bring the final redemption. The Messiah has already come, but for them, since the Messiah hasn't come in their mind, then they have this backwards theology. And the final flood will begin on the same day that the flood of Noah ended, the 17th of Sivan. And the website added, well, this is another error, because the proleptic calendar that the Jews have, I have a whole episode on this in my Sabbath series called Revealing God's True Calendar, Why the Lunar Sabbath is Wrong. Go check it out. It's a long episode, but you're going to learn quite a bit. There's a summary at the end if you want to watch it. But watch it in parts if you have to. You're going to learn quite a bit of how the Jews actually, well, Israelites, I should say, not the Jews, because the Jews didn't come until later. The Israelites and the Hebrews reckoned time before Babylon. Let me just put it that way. They did not have proper names for months. They did not have names for days. There was the Sabbath day, and there was the other 6 days. There was the first section of the year called the Chodesh, and a Chodesh is not a month. Chodesh is a period of time that the sun is in the constellation. So check it out. They reckon time very differently. But again, if you are Talmudic rabbi, you say, oh, it's going to be on the 17th of Sivan. Well, the Bible doesn't say Sivan. The Bible says the 17th of the month. But the word month in English is actually translated from Chodesh. And because it's the Old Testament, Chodesh has a vastly different meaning than what we today reckon as a month. So you got to learn these truths and see behind these, because they use all these things very cleverly to justify their position. But now let's go to the Bible. Let's go to Matthew 5. And a very important thing is that Jesus says, love your enemies. You have heard that it is said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Doesn't that sound like the Talmud? Doesn't that sound like the tradition of men that they carried through after rejecting Christ? Well, Christ is addressing it here. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. Do you get my point? I hope you do. This is, if you look in BitChute, it's kind of hard to find on YouTube because YouTube is so dang censored, but if you type in BitChute like HARP, H-A-A-R-P, cloud, this is so much stuff on just, you can watch videos of them creating weather modifications and creating clouds, creating rain, hurricanes, all this kind of stuff. This is not a conspiracy theory, folks. They've been doing this for decades. Cloud seeding. So again, if you know the history of the state of Israel, if you know who's really in charge, the papacy and its Jesuits and all of its schemes, how it created the state of Israel, because it needs this state in order to fulfill its false prophecy and bring the world into its control and deceive many by false signs and wonders. Well, this is one of those false signs and wonders. Is it possible that all of these things are being coordinated to make you feel that prophecy is being fulfilled? Just think about it. But let's take a look at the Bible again and see what it has to say about all those things we just read. This is from Peter, 2 Peter chapter 3. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief, and then the heavens will pass away. Now, this is not a rapture, so don't read into it. I have a whole episode on the rapture in my end time series. Check that out. And the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the heavenly bodies will be burned up and dissolved, and the earth and the works that are done it will be exposed. Since all these things are thus to be dissolved, what sort of people ought you to be in the lives of holiness, of godliness, waiting for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be set on fire and dissolved, and the heavenly bodies will melt as they burn. Does anything there suggest a water judgment where God is going to flood the earth again, but not the Jews, but everybody else? Yeah. Is there anything about that? No. The second judgment is going to be with fire, because God already made the covenant with Noah that he would never flood the earth again. The first judgment was with water, which, by the way, was also to paint a picture for baptism, which is what Peter talks about as well in his letters. That Noah going through the flood was a picture of salvation and baptism. The final judgment will be with fire. And if you look at the pattern of God's wrath throughout most of the Old Testament, it's all the time, most of the time, like I said, with fire. It's associated to fire. So the final judgment will be with fire. And the heavens will burn, the earth will burn. The wicked who rejected Christ will be thrown into the lake of fire along with the devil. It's fire. There's no mention of water whatsoever. I'm sure there will be increasing signs, and I'm sure that with all of the things that are happening, they are going to use water as a way to convince you into this new world system through the climate change dialectic, through these various false prophecies that are being pointed to. This prophecy they were pointed to is from the Zohar. It's not from the Bible. So it's very likely that they're using some sort of weather modification, saying, look, see, the Zohar predicted it, and they're being fulfilled in prophecy, but they're not. They're not actual prophecies. This is now Genesis 9. Let's look at the flood narrative and see what actually happened. This is verse 12. And God said, this is the sign of the covenant that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. I have set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. Who is the covenant between? God and the earth. When I bring clouds over the earth and the bow is in the scene in the clouds, I will remember my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature and all flesh, of all flesh. And the water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. Never again. When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it and remember it, the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. Very plain language. God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all the flesh that is on the earth. So yes, Noah is given a covenant, but the covenant is much larger in scope. It's between God and the earth. God is never going to flood the earth with a flood like that ever again. Now, will there be natural disasters? Of course. If you recall, actually, from the, I think it was 2023 Carnival. I think 2023. Blasphemous Carnival in Brazil, where they were mocking Christ and doing all sorts of just evil things. They got a warning. Before the carnival, that was like a week before, lightning struck the statue of the Redeemer overlooking, I think it's Sao Paulo, Brazil, but anyway, famous statue on the mountain, struck by lightning a week before, I think. they didn't listen. So what happened after the carnival, after they mocked Christ? They had experienced more flooding than Brazil had ever experienced in many decades, I believe. It's one of the worst floods ever. Is that a sign of God's wrath? Probably. I would connect the dots and say yes. But God is never going to flood the world ever again. So this whole Talmudic prophecy where the Jews are going to be okay, but everybody else is going to be flooded, doesn't make sense, because that's not what the Bible tells you. And it doesn't say also that God will cut this covenant. This covenant is a perpetual covenant. It's not a covenant with Noah specifically. It's a covenant with the earth that he will never flood the earth again. So again, they're misappropriating scripture and they're using external resources like the Zohar and the rabbinical commentaries to say, well, this rabbi said this and that rabbi said that, but it's all teachings of men. You have to realize that. Expert, Star of Jacob will appear on Friday, September 27th. Let's see. What I see for them is not vet. What I behold will not be soon. A star rises from Yaakov, a scepter from forth. From Israel, it smashes the brow of Moab, the foundation of all the children of Shed. This is from Numbers, and it's Balaam's final oracle. And it's about Christ. But of course, they reject Christ, so they have to appropriate it to themselves. And Christian Zionists are so deceived that they go along with these things, which is just so sad. A brilliant but relatively unknown author and teacher referred to classical Jewish sources that described the tumultuous end of days in terms that were disturbingly similar to current events. The Zohar describes, again, what book are they using? The Zohar is a mystical text. It's an Antichrist book. Doesn't tell you the truth. Describes an unmistakable sign that heralds the appearance of the Messiah, the Star of Jacob first described in the Bible by Balaam. The Zohar gives a precise day and date that this pre-Messiah astral body will appear. Now, before I continue, you have to understand, in the Bible, we're going to look at this. It doesn't give you a date. Balaam doesn't give a date for when this happens. The Zohar gives you a date because the Zohar rejects Christ. You are actually given a date in Revelation 12, and we're going to look at it. And it confirms Daniel's 70 weeks of when Jesus was born and when Jesus was crucified and when Jesus started his ministry and so on. It confirms down to the year exactly. And of course, if you follow good biblical principles, then Daniel 70 weeks refutes dispensationalism, like clearly. But anyway, we'll go on here. The Zohar gives a precise day and date, and this pre-Messiah astral body will appear. And recently, astronomers confirmed that on the precise date, a comet will appear in the heavens. Oh my gosh, there you go. False signs and wonders by all the workings of the devil. Ephraim Palvinov, a teacher and author, writes the blog Mayim, acronym Final Waters, named for the little-known Jewish ritual of washing the fingers after a meal. Do you mean the Jewish ritual that Christ rebuked the Pharisees for? Because the Pharisees were telling him, why don't your apostles wash their fingers? And Christ said, it is not what goes in a man that defiles him, but rather what comes out of a man. Like the eponymous mitzvah, the blog covers Jewish subjects that are misunderstood or not normally discussed. In a recent lecture, Palvinov described the current wars in Ukraine and Israel as being constituent with end-of-days predictions recorded in classical Jewish literature. Now, this guy, I've read about him before. He appropriates the war in Ukraine with prophecies like in Jeremiah that are actually talking about Babylon from the north. You got to understand that Jeremiah did not prophesy for a counterfeit state of Jews 2,000 plus years after his existence. No, he prophesied against the Israelites of his day that were apostates and were going to be judged by the power from the north, which was Babylon. So this is just, of course, they have to reappropriate and justify themselves. I found something a few weeks ago that just really blew me away, and I've been really excited to share it, Palvinov said. But I'm going to leave that to the end. We'll save the best for last, so don't fall asleep. Of course, there's a video, Will Mashiach Come This Year? There's a lot of hype on this, people. A lot of hype that the Messiah is going to come this year and the temple's going to be rebuilt. All these things are happening. in the wake of this conflict that has been engineered, you have to understand how all these things go together. It's designed to bring about the new thing. Palvinov referred to lectures he gave 2 years ago during the pandemic. I said plandemic, but I was right the first time, in which he suggested that the world was in the pre-Messiah period. According to who, I wonder? I mean, just teachings of men. This part of the lecture was described in Israel 365 News last week. In the lecture, Palvinov explained that the current war in Ukraine and the more recent war in Israel were explicitly described in Jewish sources as being part of the final redemption. Well, not in the Bible, that's for sure. One of the sources, a midrash, there we go. So a commentary by some rabbis who rejected Christ. From Pirkei to Rabbi Eliezer, chapter 30, describe three wars the sons of Ishmael, i.e. the Arabs, will wage in the end of days, based on a verse in Isaiah. Isaiah 21:15, for they have fled before swords, before the whetted sword, before the bow that was drawn, before the stress of war. Is this having to do with modern-day Israel and, like, conflicts in the Middle East? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. These things are just teachings of men. So now, let's go to the Word of God and refute these things, because we need some sound judgment. Numbers 24, Balaam's oracles. This is Balaam's final oracle. Let's see. And he took up his discourse and said, the oracle of Balaam, the son of Beor, the oracle of the man whose eye is opened, the oracle of him who hears the words of God and knows the knowledge of the Most High, who sees the vision of the Almighty, falling down with his eyes uncovered. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel. It shall crush the forehead of Moab and break down all the sons of Sheth. Edom shall be dispossessed. Seir also, his enemies, shall be dispossessed. Israel is doing valiantly, and one from Jacob shall exercise dominion and destroy the survivors of the cities. This is about the Messiah, but does it tell you the day and time that he'll come? No, it says, I see him, verse 17, but not now. I behold him, but not near. Of course, Balaam's oracle was, you know, I don't know, 1,200 years before Christ, something like that. It was many centuries before Christ. So it was far off. But if you look in Revelation 12, with the supernatural signs that John sees, now these are typological in nature. It's talking about the woman giving birth to the Messiah. Israel, obviously, is the woman in the Old Testament, which, of course, is another proof against dispensationalism and Jewish-focused futurism, because the woman in this vision is the same woman that gives birth to the Messiah. She gave birth to a male child. But then she flees into the wilderness for 1,260 days, which are years. If you disagree with that, you have to learn the truth in the end times, because this is a Jesuit deception that this is literal days. But if you realize that they're years, then the woman who's fleeing, which is the church, because they were persecuted by the Roman power, is the same woman that gave birth to the child. Well, obviously the church is not Israel, but there is a spiritual Israel, meaning the people who God has chosen to save. The elect of Christ have always been the same group of people. The Old Testament and the New Testament, just the only difference is that now there's more, and it's open to the entire earth. Whereas before, it was limited to the nation of Israel prior to the cross. But nonetheless, this is typological, but it also is astrological, or not astrological, but astronomical. I don't believe in astrology, but people did watch the skies and the heavens. Again, watch that episode on the lunar Sabbath and revealing God's true calendar. You'll learn how people understood time. It was the position of the sun in various constellations. And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet. This is a timestamp, people. It's a timestamp of when certain celestial bodies were in what position, which is what the three magi recognized. And then they came, and there was a supernatural sign over Bethlehem, and they followed it to Bethlehem. But they recognized the alignment of the stars, and they said, oh, a king is going to be born. It was so unique of an alignment that they realized what was going on. God revealed it to them. And in Revelation, John reveals it to you. Why? Because it confirms the birthday of Jesus. Jesus was born in 3 BC. Now, that confirms Daniel's 70 weeks, because Daniel's 70 weeks is interpreted historically. And if you go historically, it tells you that Jesus is supposed to show up in AD 27. Luke's timestamps in his gospel, in fact, if we actually look at it, really quick. Okay, actually, it's Luke 3. So In the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius, Caesar, Pontius Pilate being governor of Judea, and Herod being tetrarch of Galilee, and his brother Philip, tetrarch of the region of Iturea and Trachonitis, and Lysanias, tetrarch of Abilene, during the high priesthood of Annas and Caiaphas, the word of God came to John, the son of Zechariah, in the wilderness. So Luke is timestamping when the ministry of Christ began. And he says that he was about 30. I think somewhere in here he says that he was about 30. I forget the verse, but anyway, Jesus was about 30. Now, if you do the research on these, and I've done it in my End Times episode on the Daniel 70 weeks, you will find that the timestamp is AD 27, when all of these people's particular rulings and time that they were in office intersect. It's about AD 27. And Luke says that Jesus was about 30. Now, if that's the case, then Jesus was indeed born in 3 BC. And the timestamp in Revelation 12, there's a whole presentation by Michael Heiser, actually. It's very fascinating. He's been passed away, obviously, now, but he has a presentation on YouTube, which is very good. And you can see how these people interpreted the skies and realized, oh my gosh, the Savior is being born, which is very interesting. But nonetheless, that, if anything, proves to you when the Messiah was born. Daniel 70 weeks and confirmation with Revelation 12, that there is actually signs in the sky that prove when he was born. The Balaam's oracle doesn't tell you when the Messiah was coming. The Zohar says, oh, well, you know, there's going to be such and such sign, and that's when the Messiah is going to come. So which one do you trust? Well, if you reject Christ, then you have no other choice but to trust the word of the devil, which is through the Zohar and the Talmud and every other thing. And so this is why these people are so deceived, and they should be prayed for so that they come to the truth. But of course, many of them will be lost, probably because they'll reject it. There is no future revival of the Jews. That's another thing. If you see that, if you see some charismatic revival of the Jews or some, let's say something happens, let's say a quote-unquote Antichrist walks into the Jewish temple, then you see a supernatural appearance of somebody that appears to be Jesus, and there's this massive conversion in Israel. Well, you will know that that is part of the Great Delusion. You will know that because the Bible does not predict a future revival of Israel, let alone a state of Israel. It also says that when Jesus returns, the first thing that happens is that we meet him in the air along with the others that are resurrected. If you do not see those two supernatural signs, and I'm not talking about a rapture here, I'm talking about a supernatural, whatever you want to call it, levitation. You're going to come off the ground and you're going to meet Christ in the air and then come back down to the earth. But that cannot be counterfeited, and that is why I believe the Lord determined it that way, because you can't counterfeit that. Satan can masquerade as Christ, and he might do that. I don't know. At this point, with the way that they're pushing this prophecy, this false prophecy, it's a possibility. So you need to realize these things. But anyway, the Jewish prophecies always rely on introducing extra biblical revelation. Always. You'll notice that. They never base it on the Bible because, again, the Bible points you to Christ. It's always either oral tradition or mixed mystical texts or the teachings of rabbis and other people. I mean, it's just always something. Because the Jews rejected Jesus and the plain revelation of Scripture, that's what they're left to. They are just blind guides leading the blind, just like Jesus said with the Pharisees. They're blind guides. They don't have the truth, and they are very, very deceived. And even worse, they're being puppeted by the beast, because the beast uses them and uses them for their ends, to protect itself and to bring about its one world system. Right now, the third temple is being planned, and it's probably going to be built. And a lot of people will believe that it's going to be a fulfillment of Bible prophecy, which is not true. The real temple is the church, and the real Antichrist power, who walked into it, is the Pope. And that Pope is ushering a one-world system where the kings of the earth will give their power to the woman riding the beast, who is the Catholic Church, just like they did for over 1,400 years. You have to see the truth on this. So, what's the angle with all this? Well, they might use it to create conflict that will result in world peace. I'm talking about the third temple now. They might use it to create a false revival in Israel using the whole charismatic movement, which, again, who started the charismatics? The Roman Catholic Church. Look up the Catholic Charismatic Renewal in the 1960s after Vatican II. Vatican II was when the beast changed its approach from being, we're going to kill you and burn you at the stake, to, no, come on in. You are our lost brethren. Let's do charismatic stuff. Let's put, you know, productions on theater, Hollywood, The Chosen, Bible apps. Let's do all kinds of stuff. Influencer, faith influencers, all this stuff that's Christianizing culture that I've talked about, like Jesuit Hollywood in my End Time series. All that stuff is the new thing. That is the new approach. And charismatic teachings are part of it. So how those will be used to rope in the Jews, I don't know. It might be possible to see a charismatic revival in Israel. And in that way, they will flip Zionism into a Christian nationalist agenda. Everything will be, look, the Bible is very clear. The end is not a big, bad deep state. The end is a Christian nationalist false golden age. The question is, how are all of these things being roped into it? Well, communism is a dark to light flip. That one's easy. That one is just so obviously evil that people demand conservative values and nationalist values by being oppressed by communism. Just like they will in China, just like you see in the United States, just like you see in history, where, like I talk about Pope John Paul going to Poland, people demanding religion back, basically, because they were so oppressed by communism. Communism is the opposite of Christian nationalism. So with communism, it's easy to rope people in. And that's happening throughout the world. But Zionism is a little tricky. Zionism was used as a way to bring about this agenda, but how they're going to flip them into the new thing is the question. And my hypothesis is through the charismatic movement. They're going to work the angle of converting the Jews to the new thing using some supernatural signs and moving about these dialectical systems with the new temple, with the false Messiah, with maybe an appearance of Christ. Who knows? It's an interesting time to be alive, and we have to watch it, because these angles are being worked for an agenda, without a doubt. Without a doubt. They are not biblical. They are not true. They are productions with false signs and wonders, and they are productions of the beast. So time will tell. Until then, learn the truth about the end times. Watch my end times series. Go to my website. Go to the Christian Zionist section. Just scroll to the side of the top. You'll see these little categories. You'll see a lot of good stuff there. Watch the documentary, Why the Jews Are Not God's Chosen People, and stop watching Israel all day. Stop watching these dispensationalist pundits like CBN and whatever, John Hagee and all these pastors that are just so antichrist. They are antichrist pastors. I'm sorry to say it. I hate leveling accusations against people like that, but they really are. You're not helping people. You are deceiving them, and you are supporting and championing an antichrist organization. The fact that you would support them to rebuild a temple to offer sacrifices shows where your allegiances are, and it's not to Christ. It really isn't. As Christians, we should never support such a thing. Rather, we should support the Jews to learn the truth, which is that Jesus is their Messiah. So learn who to really watch, like the Vatican, like this ecumenical stuff, like the one world system that is happening through Christian nationalism, especially in the United States. There's no rapture. There's no getting away from this. God has decreed that the new world order will happen. It is part of his plan to reveal his glory at the end when he defeats it, and part of his plan to conform and test the elect. So confirm your election and embrace the truth, because many people are deceived on these issues and they don't know the truth and they refuse the truth. And so that's really sad. So until next time, stay sharp, Fennec Fox ears all the way, and God bless.